Buffon, and then Ronaldo! Oh! What a goal by Cristiano Ronaldo!
Messi to the near post! Messi to the net!
Mamma mia! Lionel!
Romelu Chiesa now. Here's a Honduran. He'll whip it in back to the far post. Elis! Albert Elis! La Pantarita! It's a Honduran connection!
This is Soccer Matters, brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. DaspitLaw.com. Here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome into Soccer Matters here on the Horn in Austin, Texas, presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. All you got to do is go to DaspitLawAustin.com, find out about John and his firm. They're personal injury attorneys. And then all you got to do is call 512-865-6710. They are bilingual. They will handle your case. They're going to work for you 24/7, nights and weekends. And the good thing about DaspitLawAustin.com, they are getting Soccer Matters on the airwaves along with the Horn. All right, we stream at hornfm.com. That's also where you can get the podcast of this show and all of our other programming podcasts as well on the Horn. Hit me up on Twitter and Instagram, at Soccer Matters GD, at Glenn Davis Soc, Facebook Soccer Matters. And to find out a bit more about the host, it's glenndavissoccer.com. All right, great guest tonight. We got U.S. Men's National Team defender Walker Zimmerman joining the show. The U.S. National Team in camp right now. He will update us on the progress, the preparation, Greg Berhalter. And towards the end of the month, we all know that it will see the United States in another very important round of World Cup qualifying, which will include a game in Canada against Canada. We have Eric Goodman of the Austin Chronicle, does the Verde Report, a great, talented young writer. He'll join us as we discuss Austin FC moves, needs being addressed as the MLS season gets closer and closer. This will be a really condensed year for Major League Soccer, with games beginning in the end of February, as all of you know, and then the World Cup in Qatar. The league wants to get it in overdrive and wants to be done and will be done before everything occurs in this very critical World Cup year. Sporting director Claudio Reyna and head coach Josh Wolf, they got their man in Johan Valencia from Deportivo Cali in the first division, where he has appeared 163 times. 25 years of age. All right, maybe this is kind of a hint towards him being Austin FC's version of Diego Chara of Portland. One could only hope so. But I love the age of this guy. I love the fact that he is ultra defensive. It's an obvious need. Claudio Reyna had this to say about the new signing. He said, quote, Johan is a young, talented midfielder with great defensive instincts and an eye for the ball. His presence will add a new dimension to our midfield and free up some more of our attack-minded players to get forward and create chances. So this is the type of signing that can really, in my opinion, add a lot of clarity to a midfield that had a lot of nebulous nature to it last year. You know, the definition of roles, there were things that we saw in games trying to move people, change people, try different combinations, alter roles differently, trying to kind of get this thing to work. It was in a pretty easy midfield to breach at times. You need this type of a singular signing that can bring order to a specific area of a team. And this being, you know, the midfield line. And this is the type of signing that can also, and as Claudio Reyna said, define the roles of others. It seems an excellent move at this moment. It's addressing the obvious need of a simply really defensive-oriented guy in midfield to play deeper. And this will also, protect central defenders. And I would expect that Austin FC is going to add another central defender into the mix, despite the draft. Somebody a little bit more experienced. And in my mind, it would need to be somebody that takes up the next level of the center back position so that you have Cascante and Romagna battling it out to see who partners a new leader in that position in, if that can be done. An improved balanced midfield, though, getting back to that signing of Johan Valencia. An improved midfield is going to do so many things. It's going to protect the back four. It'll be a harder midfield to get through and play against. The support of the back four is vital and the two central defenders in a pressing system, as we know that Austin FC implements. Additionally, these roles becoming clear now will make this a more organized overall midfield in specific situations. They'll be effective. They'll be tougher. That's what you're going to hope for. Alex Ring can now be the two-way player he wants to be. Won't be caught in two minds. Valencia, as everybody has come to find out, he's a tackler. He's a harasser. Or he's going to probably commit the professional foul to kill off counterattacks. And he gets around the ball. I'm not sure anybody in MLS does that as well as Diego Chara has done for so many years. And that guy's 37 years of age now. So Valencia, very defensive. He's going to need to set play from that area as well. And he's going to need to be an option for his center backs when they win the ball. But a more stable midfield now. That's just wonderful music to the ears of Julio Cascante and Johan Romagna and, of course, Josh Wolf. The center back position, again, was addressed in the draft, but I would think a more seasoned central defender, as mentioned, will be on their way, you would think. But two players, two very important players, two very important players, you know, up the spine of a team in very critical roles. This could change the complexion in a really big way because I like what Austin FC has shown going forward. And I only think that gets better this year if you shore those two areas up. And I'm really excited to watch Sebastian Driussi getting a full season of, you know, coming in full preseason. Romagna getting a full preseason. Well, he had one last year. I mean, Musa Gite getting a full preseason. African Cup of Nations continues to roll on. That continues to be a fun watch. I don't know if you have BN Sport. I have Roku, but it is a really, really good watch and one that I think if you get an opportunity, check it out. All right. Manchester City does it again. They beat Chelsea this past weekend. Kevin De Bruyne, stunning goal from him. They now sit at 56 points, 22 games played, a plus 41 goal differential. That was a striking blow to Chelsea if they had designs on trying to win the league this year. Unbelievably now, Chelsea are 13 points in second place behind Manchester City. Got Liverpool jumping in there in third place. And then you got a bevy of teams here in West Ham United, Arsenal, Spurs, Manchester United, and Wolves, all fighting for that fourth Champions League spot. That's really going to be the place to keep your eye on is fourth place Champions League between West Ham United currently in that slot, Arsenal, Spurs, United, Wolves, all in that big fight. And then, of course, you know, you add in the places for the Europa League as well. But you got to get international football. You got to get that money, as everybody knows. De Bruyne's goal for City was pretty incredible. It was a game City dominated. It was at the Etihad. One of these typical curlers that we have seen him hit so many times. Pretty remarkable. They've won their last 12 matches now in the league. Thomas Tuchel, the Chelsea boss, said, quote, "We won't give up, but if City keep on winning every game, nobody can catch them." That's what Tuchel said. So, you know, then you got to say, you know, here we complain and we want a single table sometimes, but it's been so dominated here. Now you got to look for different things. Who's going to be battling for third and fourth in the league in those Champions League spots? You know, who's going to be battling to just sit and hang mid-table so they don't get relegated? Pep Guardiola went on to say it was absolutely well-deserved. We cannot expect 10, 12 chances against that team. They are the European champions. So Pep Guardiola having his say. Manchester City now have 13 shutouts, 13 clean sheets in the Premier League this year, three more than Liverpool, who have 10. All right, stay with us. When we come back, we're going to talk to U.S. men's national team midfielder. He is the one and only Walker Zimmerman. We'll talk to him next. Plus, just a reminder here, we're on the air here and presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLawAustin.com, 512-865-6710. They're bilingual. They'll take your case. They'll work for you 24/7, nights and weekends. DaspitLawAustin.com, presenting sponsors of Soccer Matters here on the Horn. All right, welcome back to the Horn here in Austin, Texas. Soccer Matters here, presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. It's DaspitLawAustin.com. They are bilingual. You give them a call, 512-865-6710. That's 512-865-6710. John Daspit, DaspitLawAustin.com, presenting sponsors of this show, personal injury attorneys. They're going to work for you 24/7, nights and weekends. So if you get in that accident, a car, boat, motorcycle, well, all you got to do is hit up the Daspit Law Firm. DaspitLawAustin.com, 512-865-6710. U.S. Men's National Team Camp underway right now. The U.S. has those very important World Cup qualifiers coming up at the end of the month. We had an opportunity to catch up with U.S. Men's National Team defender Walker Zimmerman. Walker, thanks very much for joining the show, and we appreciate you coming on. Just how about a couple of insights into how the camp has gone so far under Greg Berhalter?
Well, it's been great. You know, this is always looked at as a time for mainly MLS guys to kind of get on their feet again after a long season. But this one's a little bit different in the sense that we're preparing for qualifiers at the end of it. It's not just a friendly or two friendlies. We got games that are really important and that really matter. And so that's changed a little bit in terms of how the camp is being run.
Talking to Walker Zimmerman, U.S. national team defender, also at Nashville right now. Two straight years now he's been the MLS defender of the year. What's kind of the messaging now based on the fact that these qualifiers are right around the corner?
Well, it's all about preparation. It's making sure, one, I think a priority is fitness. You know, again, I mentioned for some guys who maybe weren't involved in the December camp, they've been off for a little bit, maybe a month or so. And for the guys who were involved in that December camp, a couple weeks. And it's just about getting that rust off. Making sure guys are in a good spot physically to where they can compete for 90 minutes in high-stakes games.
So your career kind of, to me, has gone a little bit in the blink of an eye, because I remember you being a young guy coming into the league, and now I'm looking, wow, he's 28 now, which I found hard to believe. Things do come fast. FC Dallas, LAFC, Nashville. This is your ticket to get to a World Cup, isn't it?
It is. You know, I think even as a kid, as you started to have success at the youth level, looking into college, you always kind of know when you're supposed to be in your prime. And so for me, this was always, okay, theoretically on paper, this is probably my best chance. So I've had 22 circled in my calendar for a long time. I've known that it's going to take a lot of work to get there. And it's pretty crazy, like you said, in a blink of an eye that this year, this monumental year is already here.
Somebody had said, hey, guess how old Walker is right now? I would have put you at 25, probably.
I appreciate that.
It just seems like it goes very, very fast. So look, you're on the national team now. You were in those very important qualifiers. We got that huge win over Mexico. Everybody very excited about that. Two very different games. You played with two different center backs in those games, Miles Robinson and Chris Richards. How big of a challenge is it for you to adapt to playing with a different partner? And does your game get altered being with one or the other a little bit or a little bit differently?
I think there's always subtle differences between center back partners. Obviously, it's pretty well documented the importance of relationships between center back partners just because there's so much communication that's involved. And being the last line of defense, if you're not on the same page, all of a sudden, okay, now the guy who'd normally be offsides is now onsides. Now you might lose the game. So there are definitely subtle differences. Both are phenomenal players. Both have had a great past couple of seasons where they've really grown and developed. And thankfully, you know, now having gotten more and more reps with Miles in the past, very comfortable with him. And then now is, you know, Chris and I, we hadn't had many reps together even in training. And so to go on the road, to get a shutout there in Jamaica, well, it was a really big step for us. And pleased with how we handled things. In terms of, you know, opportunities and obviously it was a great goal from them. that I wouldn't say we felt like there was much we could do about that one.
You guys defended well. All right. So how difficult was that to come off that high of Mexico, right? Our greatest rival, flip it. You're down in Jamaica, not as big, no crowd, whole different environment. I don't know if you can express to people how difficult that change is because, you know, all of a sudden you get people who are very, very disappointed, you know, oh, we got to tag the Mexico win with a good result in Jamaica, but it is a mental challenge as well, right?
It is. And you know, I think a lot of us haven't had a lot of World Cup qualifying experience. And so we had heard the same thing, like, oh, it's just super difficult to qualify in CONCACAF and going on the road and getting results. And you hear that and you're like, okay, right, like I get it, but like we have a really good team. And then you're in it and the game ends and you might, you know, get a tie or possibly a loss. And you're just thinking like, man, it really is difficult to get results in these games. And so the Jamaica one, you know, obviously they score a goal, you know, top class strike from Antonio. And it kind of took the momentum away from us. You know, we had come out really good in that Jamaica game, scored early. And I think probably in our heads, we're thinking, this is it. Like, this is our chance to win our back-to-back games, really make a move up in the table for the standings there. And, you know, ended up with a draw. But they're just different games. You know, everyone recognizes how important they are. There is a do-or-die kind of mentality in every single game. And you have to have that because at the end of the day, it's more than just you as an individual, you as a team. We're representing the whole country. And, you know, we're trying to inspire them with our performances. And when you don't get results on the road like that, you're responsible and you got to handle, you know, the questions that may come. But at the end of the day, you know, you're focused within the group and you know that you're just kind of on a good pace. You're plugging along, getting to that ultimate goal, which is qualifying for World Cup. So we're pleased with where we are. Sure, we would have had liked to get a couple more results on the road, but, you know, we're in a good spot heading into these last six qualifiers.
Talking to Walker Zimmerman, Nashville defender, also the U.S. men's national team. You used the words do or die. Is that what training's like? I mean, because look, you're fighting to go to not only help qualify the country, you want to go to the World Cup. It's the pinnacle of the game. Is it do or die in training? And do you feel that with your teammates?
Honestly, it's felt pretty much do or die since my first call up to the national team. So this is Jan camp number six for me. And the feeling's the same. Every single time I come in, I know that my spot is not given. Nothing has been earned. And things change so quickly from camp to camp, from game to game. And always having yourself ready mentally, physically, to be able to perform is something that, you know, it takes a lot of effort. It takes a lot of concentration, a lot of preparation and off seasons. And it really is a nonstop process. And you can't ever be settled with where you are because, you know, as we see, we have so much young talent coming through and even guys that have had experience who are, you know, are playing well. So the competition is always going to be there and you just got to make sure that you're never content with where you are.
Do you get that sense? Like I look at this team and I go, and I remember when we didn't qualify for the last World Cup. And then I said to myself, wow, there's a silver lining here because there's all this great young talent. They're starting to get themselves on big clubs. Look at this. It's going to accelerate the process. You guys, as young soccer players, and even the guys even younger than you, I'm talking 6-7 years younger than you, you get the sense that there's a real esprit de corps and there is, hey, this is unprecedented times. We want to do something unique. This is our national team.
Yeah, 100%. I think we've really done a good job in terms of team culture, taking ownership of that transitional period. You know, it's pretty rare to see the turnover that took place after failing to qualify in the last cycle. And, you know, we accept that responsibility. We accept that ownership and have really come together with a lot of guys that have contributed big minutes. And we have a similar belief and a similar vision, and that's to qualify for the World Cup. And if you're all bought in together, you know, it's going to make it much more difficult to stop you.
Is it hard for you guys to keep each other accountable, or is that just something that goes without even questioning?
You know, I think it comes from a lot of the guys who have leadership qualities or have been around a little bit more. You have to have those high demands and you have to have high expectations. And that's not just in the games, that's in training. You mentioned the competitiveness. I mean, that you got a bunch of guys who are highly, highly competitive. They wouldn't have made it to be a professional without that, you know, gene. And so when you get those guys together on a training field, if you lose a small side game, you're pissed the rest of the day. You know, it doesn't just go away. You're fighting every single drill, every single exercise to win. And that's a really important part of our team culture that, you know, we're trying to instill in everyone.
You seem to have the feel that losses hurt. And I'm not just talking with the national team. In Major League Soccer, maybe, where there isn't as much consequence during the middle of the year, June and July, I can see how it would. You got to be strong mentally to keep yourself in it. Is it hard to make sure that these losses hurt at that time of the year in Major League Soccer, you know, based on a playoff system and the way the league is structured?
Yeah, I think there's a fine line there between not being too high with the highs or too low with the lows and not, you know, completely beating yourself up over a loss, because you don't want that to bleed into, you know, the mentality for the next game or anything like that. But at the same time, if you aren't upset with losing in general, then you might need to kind of recalibrate your brain and figure it out, because, you know, this, we have the greatest job in the world to do something that we love, to play for people, for cities, and have that responsibility and to get paid to do it. If you don't think that that's enough of a motivating factor to go out and want to win every single time you're on the field, then you definitely need to kind of take a step back and figure out, you know, how to change that attitude.
Talking to Walker Zimmerman, MLS Best 11, All-Star, two-time MLS Defender of the Year, U.S. National Team, a huge part of that big victory over Mexico, had an outstanding game in qualifying. U.S. on January 27th, taking on El Salvador, then Canada, then Honduras. Was there a stage, Walker, in your career, once you got into the pros, was there a moment where, a singular moment, it could have been a veteran player, anything that began to help the center back position crystallize to you at the next level, and you began to really understand maybe the position even more coming from the college game?
It's a great question. I think, you know, a big turning point for me was probably the playoffs 2015, that Seattle game in Dallas, where I'd kind of been making a lot of appearances that year, you know, started probably 14 or so games, but appeared in, I don't know, two-thirds of the season, three-fourths of the season, and came off the bench, scored the equalizer against Seattle, scored the PK for the win, and kind of, you know, that moment for me transitioned from being kind of a role player, yeah, we know we can compete at this level, to then going into 2016 as the starter. That was a big switch for me, being able to play every single game, have the repetition, because there was never a question in my mind of, can I compete at this level? It's, you know, I need to get on the field and play in every single game, get minutes, get consistency. And so I think that moment between the 2015 playoffs and start of the 2016 season was probably the pivotal point for me, and kind of started this trajectory.
How much is the center back position changing since even you got into Major League Soccer? Because the demands on a center back are a lot different than the old days.
A lot. They've become a lot different. And a lot of that is dictated by the style of play of the team that you're on. So it's been really fun for me, actually, to be on three teams with three very unique styles of play. And it's kind of helped make me a more well-rounded defender, having to defend in different ways, read the game in different ways. Because, you know, you see pictures all the time in trainings and games, and to have those from different formations, different teams, it just adds to your arsenal that, you know, then when you're going up against an opponent, it's something that you've seen before. And, you know, it certainly challenged me along the way being in different systems. But, you know, I've also been fortunate with the coaches I've played under. I've learned a lot from every single one, three of the best in MLS for sure, between Oscar and Bob and now Gary. And then not to mention the national team coaches with Bruce and Greg. So, you know, really good coaches that have helped me grow my game along the way, help me understand a lot more from a tactical side of things. And that's been a real fun part of this journey for me is seeing the growth, feeling the growth, feeling the game slow down every single year and become easier year over year, even with the influx of more attacking talent in MLS. So that's a good thing to know that it's becoming easier for you despite having more talent coming into the league.
Greg Berhalter, as your coach, was a center back. Does he ever, does he ever impart a singular tip on you, or maybe walk into the dressing room you know, hey, think about considering this, or does that ever happen?
Yeah, I think Greg is certainly very in tune with his center backs. There's a lot of communication there in training, a lot of focus on that position in training. And why not? When you are a specialist in something, you know, you need to impart all the knowledge that you've learned. And so I'm sure if I become a coach one day, I'll do the same thing with center backs. You know, you know the position better than any other on the field. And so we certainly have lots of dialogue, lots of information being thrown at us on a regular basis in training, and, you know, whether it's half times, mid-game adjustments. I think there's very good dialogue between Greg and his center backs.
Walker, before we let you go, what do you do to get away from the game? Because you can't necessarily be in a drive all the time. What do you do to relax, get away from the game? Do you completely get your mind away from the game?
You know, that's it's interesting that I came to a realization a few years ago that now is just not really the time to relax. Kind of on a full sprint until this career's over, and don't want to have any regrets in terms of taking time off. And sure, I'll try and get away and relax, but I don't know that there will be that true relaxation until it's all over for me. So even when you go on vacation, you're still working out, you're still going to the gym early, and then you can relax by the pool, but there's always something that's keeping you from fully relaxing. And that's part of the journey. It's fun. And again, I don't have any regrets at the end of this. So just hopefully you can keep it going for a lot longer.
That's a great answer. And you know what? There's plenty of time for fly fishing and reading War and Peace when the career's over, right?
That's right. That's right. There's always the championship tour in golf, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Walker, thank you so much for coming on the program. We appreciate it very much. Best of luck against El Salvador, Canada, and Honduras in the upcoming qualifiers. And again, been a pleasure watching you play the center back position. Keep up the great work.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
So great stuff there with Walker Zimmerman, all presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLawAustin.com. Again, 512-865-6710. They're bilingual. They'll take your case. Car, boat, motorcycle, whatever type of accident it is, you got to get some representation. Get it from the best. It's our presenting sponsor here on the Horn and Soccer Matters, DaspitLawAustin.com, 512-865-6710. By the way, you can hit me up on Twitter and Instagram at Soccer Matters GD and at Glenn Davis Sock. So would love to get your interaction there. You can also hit us up on Facebook, Soccer Matters. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, Eric Goodman of the Austin Chronicle, the Verde Report, we begin to talk some Austin FC. All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters here on the Horn in Austin, Texas. As always, presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. All you got to do, DaspitLawAustin.com. You give them a call, 512-865-6710. They are bilingual, and we look forward to you, supporting our sponsor who gets soccer on the radio. We're going to talk some Austin FC now. No better guy to talk with than Eric Goodman of the Verde Report, writing for the Austin Chronicle. He joins us now. Eric, how you been?
Doing great, Glenn. Had a good holiday. Hope you did as well. And the season is creeping up on us even sooner than is believable.
Yeah, it's pretty remarkable how fast this is coming. And obviously, it's going to be a very condensed year. So you're going to be a very, very busy guy, I think, on a daily basis. But let's get into some of the Austin FC off-season moves here. And I want to go right to the one that's high profile right now. Johan Valencia, 25 years of age, from Deportivo Cali. Obviously, this is addressing a real need in midfield from the standpoint of balance and a bit more of a defensive-oriented player.
Yeah, this is doing a couple of things. I think it has major implications. Before we even talk about Valencia as a player, it has major implications for Alex Ring, who is, you know, obviously the team's captain, somebody that they've now, with a contract extension, by making him a designated player. Austin FC has really attached themselves to Ring and have kind of made him the centerpiece of this team, especially from a, you know, not quite an attacking standpoint. But what this move does, Johan Valencia is a completely defensive-minded midfielder, someone who doesn't, you know, show a lot of interest in getting forward, prefers to stay back and make those tackles, be a disruptor. And what that is going to allow Alex Ring to do is get much farther forward. He must have said it three or four times over the course of the season that he believes he can make an impact in the attack in ways that maybe his positioning and the ways coaches have deployed him hasn't really allowed him to kind of go and experiment with that. He did have, you know, plenty of success when Austin FC could give him that opportunity last season. He did help create chances and create goals, and he's going to be able to do a lot more of that playing in kind of that number eight midfield role and let Valencia kind of sit back, recover on defense, you know, whenever there's a turnover, and kind of let Ring take a few more gambles up front. And we'll see, that could be something that proves to be super beneficial to Austin FC in attack when they were pretty stagnant at times last season.
Eric Goodman, Austin Chronicle, Verde Report. And I would add to that, you know, simply that this defines Alex Ring's role a little bit. And I'm not sure everybody understands and appreciates how difficult last year might have been, even for him as one of your most consistent players with Austin FC, when you're in two minds like that and you're almost trying to play for two people and do two different things. So, yeah, I think you make a very, very good point there. Now, let's talk about the other very key component to this, is and how Valencia could very much be a great shield for two center backs and that position on the team. Take me into that. But is Johan Romagna and Julio Cascante, do you think that's the end game there? Or do you think there's more need in the center back position? And is Austin FC going after that need?
Yeah, I mean, the club, the decision makers, whether it's Anthony Precourt, whether it's Claudio Reyna, they've been pretty consistent in stating that they feel that center back is the biggest area of need, even was before any of these offseason moves were made. And so I still expect them to fill that with somebody who can come in and start immediately. I think whether or not that means that day one, they may still go with kind of the known quantities of Cascante and Romagna, but at this point, their depth is pretty small in center back. So I don't expect it to be somebody, you know, of a $1 million plus transfer fee that would be, you know, instantly an elite center back in MLS, but certainly someone who is an improvement on what they have, or at least someone that they can comfortably rotate and not have to feel like they're taking a risk on a younger player who might not have that experience, somebody that can be relied on in the back in front.
Yeah, I might disagree. I might say it's got to be a starter to lift the other two.
Oh, I think it absolutely should be. I think that's how you get this team better defensively. But I'm just wondering, with these, you know, high profile moves that they've already made, at least with Urruti and Valencia now, if there's kind of that reserve that they can spend to bring somebody in at that caliber.
Talking to Eric Goodman, do you call Maxi Urruti a big signing?
I think so. I think you call him. I mean, he's somebody who is a known goal scorer in MLS. You know, he's shown, you know, at every place that he's been that he can.
It wasn't last year. He was for the first couple months of the season.
Right.
He went dry.
With volume.
There's a reason he's on three Texas teams. Now, I'm not bagging on Maxi because he's a fantastic professional, fantastic player, but he is very different than Musa Gite. And you know, I need some clarity as to what's going to go on up front and what Urruti's role is, because maybe he's been told, look, yeah, you're coming to Austin FC. You might have to play a little bit wider at times. You might be a guy that comes off the bench. You might be a spot starter, but he's not a traditional number nine.
Yeah, I think Austin FC, frankly, has kind of felt like they needed to hedge their bets a little bit with Gite. He came in, made a big splash, scored a goal pretty quickly in his career, but didn't really add much after that. You know, a lot of his minutes, you know, he wasn't in that kind of center pocket in between the gaps on the back line. He would stray out to the wings, kind of. You know, I asked Josh Wolf if kind of that was an instruction he was being given, and Wolf suggested that, you know, it's kind of something he wants to see less of from Gite. He wants Gite to kind of spend more time being that dominant presence, which is exactly what Maxi Urruti kind of specializes in, just camping in the box, finding space where he can, and then firing off, you know, shots.
Actually, I'm going to differ with you again. He doesn't stay in the box. That's what the problem was in Houston. He's a real freelancer. He's movement and mobility. And I don't know how many, you know, Houston games or even Portland games you watched in the past, but he's a guy that is all about movement and mobility. Now, if you got the idea here was a pressing system with him doing a lot of work, but he is not a traditional sort of central player. I'm going to take you back to Gite and ask you if, you know, now that he's going to get a full preseason, that could be a real benefit, right?
Yeah, absolutely. He's getting more familiar. You know, he's somebody who, you know, didn't speak, not only did he not speak English coming in, he didn't speak Spanish as well. You know, he kind of had to rely on translators and Kakuta Mane, who, by the way, is no longer with the club. So, you know, we'll never know exactly how difficult that transition was for him on a personal standpoint, integrating with the club in midseason. I think you can absolutely, you know, the hope is certainly for Austin FC that with a full preseason, getting more acclimated to the system, that familiarity kind of helps unleash the physical tools that really only he can bring.
Yeah, and we forget, and even I forget sometimes, Eric, how young Romagna and Gite really are. I mean, these are kids, right? We can't forget that. We're talking to Eric Goodman of the Austin Chronicle, does a Verde report, super job doing that. So, you know, if Austin FC is going to really address, and they have here with Johan Valencia, some balance in midfield from a defensive standpoint, they add a center back. You got to say they've done some pretty darn good offseason business. They identified their problems and are strengthening the team up the spine.
Well, so to their credit, that was always the goal from their very first inaugural roster, was that it wouldn't be a finished product, that they were going to, you know, put this team on the field and see where the gaps are and where the holes are. They filled a huge one with Sebastian Driussi in attack, and he made an instant impact. It was kind of right around that same time where they got unlucky with Matt Beisler's injury, and a team that was having a really good season defensively but couldn't score turned into a team that was scoring a lot of goals but giving up even more than that. And I think Valencia certainly helps that. By the way, he also brings a winning pedigree, just was a starter throughout an entire season with Deportivo Cali, who won the Colombian championship, Colombian, you know, first division. So that obviously is, you know, something that a lot of these players will be able to feed off of. That center back is really just the last missing piece. We'll see what maybe they got out of Kip Keller out of the super draft. He was, you know, by those who were evaluating the entire draft class, pretty much exclusively regarded as the top center back in that class. And he's young. He left college after his sophomore season. So he's not even as young as Johan Romagna, just to give a sense of how MLS is really going after these young international players, that they're even younger than college kids. But that's certainly another option that they have for depth at the very least.
Well, you never know, right? Kip Keller out of St. Louis University, good soccer program, prepares players for the pros. You never know. Maybe he becomes a Henry Kessler like in New England and really takes to Major League Soccer easier than most. It is a big change. It is a big difference. I don't think there's any question. Let's go back to the thoughts on Maxi Arruti, because I want to make sure I was not disrespectful to Maxi. He's a great pro. He'll add a lot of energy. He will be a fan favorite, I think, because of the effort he puts in. But it is interesting, and he's not going to be making the cash he made in Houston. I can guarantee you that. So I actually think that's really good business from Austin FC. I'm very interested to see how they're ultimately going to use him. So in a nutshell, Tomas Pochettino to River Plate, more of an attack-oriented guy, doesn't bring you the defensive qualities. You flip that with Johan Valencia, great move there in midfield, and then looking for a center back. So this is solid thinking and planning here. I think this was pretty obvious to people on the outside who followed the team. The other thing is, though, then you have to go execute and do something about it. Sebastian Driussi, take me into him a little bit more, because I think he's a wonderful talent, and I think this type of move is also going to benefit him greatly.
Yeah, one of those rare players that just has a knack for finding the ball. You know, he wants the ball at his feet at all times. When he has it, he creates things for Austin FC. There was one, you know, he had kind of the highlight of the season, maybe not one that would show up on a goal, on a goal highlight, but just an outrageous pass that he made to Spring. I think it was Jared Stroud or John Gallagher, kind of like a scorpion pass over the defense. He's just got that extra special bit of ability that is rare in this league, even still, as much as it's improved, to bring in a player who can kind of make something out of nothing when you really need it. Now we'll just have to see, as Austin FC kind of improves the rest of the roster, how good he can be and how far he can take them up, you know, potentially into playoff contention.
Yeah, he's exciting. I agree with you 100%. I'm looking forward to seeing some of the things he does. And also, again, with a full preseason, right? So let's not forget that. That's going to make a big, big, big difference. All right, you got Atlas coming in, the champions of Mexico. They beat León. It was their first title in 70 years. It's a place I've spent a lot of time when I was in youth development down there. And Ricardo La Volpe was the coach, and Efrain Flores was there. They're coming to Q2. So just for people, and before I lead you into what this means, this is one of the best developers of young talent in the history of Mexico. Listen to the names that have come out of there. Rafa Márquez, Pavel Pardo, Andreas Guardado, who just became the Mexican with the most games played in Europe. Jared Borghetti, Oswaldo Sanchez, Daniel Osorno. I mean, we can go on and on. But what does this mean to Austin, Texas, having the champions of Mexico come to play Austin FC?
Yeah, well, it's the third match that will, you know, kind of cater to fans of the sport in Mexico. We just had El Tri in a friendly, the Mexican national team. Before that, Austin FC played Tigres. It's a point the club is clearly making, and the ownership that they want Q2 Stadium not to just be for American soccer 100% of the time. They want to expose and maybe kind of combine the two cultures of people who are fans of the sport in Mexico and in the United States, and showing that it really is the same game and they can compete. The Tigres match was a great environment. The El Tri match was a fantastic environment, even with, you know, kind of maybe a generous C roster that they were fielding. And I think this one will be no different. And you have that extra kind of added bonus and significance of it being, we haven't seen any other friendlies scheduled yet, but it might be the very first time that this reshaped 2022 roster for Austin FC takes the field, which will be a big moment as well.
Will you do any pieces or anything prior to that game to kind of introduce people to Atlas and their history and some of the things that have gone on there over the years?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's kind of going to dovetail also with an entire season preview that we'll have in the Austin Chronicle as we get closer to the end of February and that first match. But yeah, that will definitely, I unfortunately won't be able to be at that particular match personally, because it's during the Winter Olympics, which I'm lucky to cover for NBC Sports as well. So I'll be kind of off in my bunker, in my flipped schedule bunker, but certainly looking forward to watching it on television.
Yeah, I know you disappeared for a while there. All right. So if we look back on this year, Diego Fagundes, Brad Stuver, Alex Ring seem to me to be the most consistent players. Do you put anybody else in that category?
Well, Drew Yussi's up there now, given, and I think, those four create kind of the core of this team. It'll be interesting to see. I think Valencia will certainly get the minutes and will be welcomed in as one of the foundational starters in this roster. But you kind of are starting to see the plan that Claudio Reyna and Josh Wolf have kind of put together with this team.
How much pressure's on Josh Wolf and Claudio Reyna now in year two, and what are the demands of the fans? Because we know it's a party there. I mean, no matter what, it was a party there this year. I mean, is there a novelty factor that has to be factored in here and sustaining what has been some really tremendous, unbelievable loyal support, I will say? How important is all that coming together?
Well, one thing, even with, the consistent, great attendance that the team had last year and with kind of the exceptional support, there was still quite a lot of people unhappy and unsatisfied with the performance last season. And a lot of people unsatisfied with how Josh Wolf kind of built, put this team, this roster on the field, the decisions he was making. I think he absolutely should be given every chance to have success this season. But yes, I do think there's quite a bit of pressure. Austin FC has to show improvement. The performance last season is one that you can justify sort of as an expansion team that, especially in a COVID season, there's a lot of excuses you can draw to, but that has to get better in year two, or else, there will be changes that the fans and the club might need to make. And I'm glad you also brought up Claudio Reyna, because a lot of Austin FC's problems, you can point to the flawed roster that was put on the field, and Josh Wolf has to, that's not necessarily all on Josh Wolf. I think if things go poorly for the club this season, you got to look at both of them as a package deal. as where the blame would lie.
Yeah, and both Claudio and Josh know that. And, you know, GMs are generally shielded a little bit more from the problems, you know. Right. And people generally go to the head coach, as you know. All right, you know, you and I have talked about this before. I thought there was just some wonderful forward play at times, circulation of the ball, people are overlapping people. I mean, just some really exciting, pleasing stuff with the backdrop of that crowd. And then, of course, we know the balance wasn't correct and the team was easy to hurt in transition. Let's face it. I mean, we saw it. It was obvious. So, you know, going into this year, it is exciting to see these pieces coming together and what potentially could happen here. Because if you tighten things up defensively, it could change 180 degrees.
Especially if you have, you know, the defense, I think you can say just by the impact Valencia will make, a player dedicated entirely to stopping counterattacks and to winning the ball back. So, you know, that's as much of a surefire way to improve the defense, short of just upgrading the entire back line, as you can have. The key for Austin FC, I think, really will be players like Rodney Redes, kind of Jared Stroud, those players kind of on the outside looking in from regular minutes. If any one of them is able to kind of take that next step and become a consistent goal contributor or assist contributor, and make this team, like you said, kind of unlock that whole forward attacking potential, I think that's when you might see Austin be able to creep up into that playoff conversation.
Why has it been a struggle for Jared Stroud and Rodney Redes?
Well, so Stroud, that's not necessarily his game. He actually, I think.
So if it's not his game, then why are you expecting him to score a lot of goals?
Well, because he's still a young player. He shouldn't be expected to score a lot of goals, but he is a young player who showed promise going forward at times. He wasn't consistent. Rodney Redes is the player that Austin FC, their very first signing ever, you know, a player they spent $2.75 million on coming from Paraguay. And he was, you know, almost a complete bust last season, pretty unplayable at times. So if he can find, but by the way, still very young, still in his early 20s,
correct.
Plenty of potential still there for him. If he can get comfortable, I think, if he can show that he's at least able to contribute, in that attack and help provide offense going forward, I think that opens up a lot of things for Josh Wolf and how he deploys that attack.
Yeah, I like that. Never say never, right? These are two very young soccer players, especially Redes. Eric, great stuff. Thank you so much, as always. You're a great contributor to this show. We appreciate you being on. Best of luck with your Olympic work, and then also continue the great stuff with the Verde Report and the Austin Chronicle.
Thank you, Glenn. Enjoyed it, as always. Take care.
Yeah, likewise. That's Eric Goodman. Great stuff there. I love the coverage from a lot of the young people up in Austin and old people like me. It's good stuff, and it keeps raising the bar. It's a wonderful thing. All right, that does it tonight for Soccer Matters here on the Horn in Austin, Texas. DaspitLaw.com. Our presenting sponsors, 512-865-6710, 512-865-6710. Big thank you to Chad and Patrick. Don't forget, it's every Monday night, Soccer Matters on the Horn in Austin, Texas. You get the podcast at hornfm.com. Remember, soccer matters.